Okay. So this was a really extraordinary film about a really incredible young teenager. And I'm wondering if you can tell me how, just give us a brief overview of the film.
Sure. And thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
So the film tells the story of a lesbian student who entered her high school out, and her high school was a Jewish high school, which is a pluralistic Jewish high school, which means that there are kids who are completely secular, kids who are somewhat religious, and kids who are Orthodox, and kind of everything in between. So she entered her pluralistic high school as an out lesbian in ninth grade and discovered that she was not only the only out kid in the school, but the only out person in the school. There were no teachers who were out either.
Right.
And she, working together with some support from Keshet, the organization that I run, she launched a campaign to establish a gay-straight alliance at her high school. And the film chronicles her fight to establish a gay-straight alliance, which became a process that really engaged and ultimately transformed the entire community.
Yeah, absolutely. The spirit of this young teenager blew my mind. To be
Yeah,
how
a
old is
lot of
she?
people respond that way.
How old was she? 16 at the time?
Yes, at the beginning of the story, she's 16.
And how did the whole thing come about? How did she come to you at Keshet?
So remarkably, her mother dropped her off at a kind of get-to-know Keshet event that was happening in Somerville, and she walked in. And at that point, Keshet had a part-time community organizer and a lot of volunteers keeping it going. And she was just blown away by being in a room full of queer Jews, as she put it later.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just it was kind of an experience that she never imagined was possible. Because like a lot of people, when they first come out in isolation, her early perspective and fears were that, you know, she was the only Jewish lesbian in the world. There couldn't possibly be any others. So she was, you know, stunned in an extraordinary way by being in this room with 50 other queer Jews. And she came up to me and she said, "Can I intern with you?" This was at the end of her first year of high school. She said, "Can I intern with you this summer? I want to learn community organizing so I can change the Jewish community." And so she started to intern with us, and one of the first things we did is talk about, you know, okay, well, which part of the Jewish community matters the most to you, and where do you think you can have the most impact?
Right.
Where do you see yourself having the most influence? She
Right.
said, "Well, definitely my school for both." And, you know, at that point, you know, this was in the early 2000s, and so the Gay Straight Alliance movement, I mean, already was a movement, certainly in this state and in some other states around the country. And most public high schools, well, many public high schools in Massachusetts at that point had gay straight alliances, including Lexington High School, which is the high school she would have gone to if she hadn't gone to her private school. And she felt like, you know, just because I'm going to a Jewish school, you know, I shouldn't be without this support, and this
Right.
school shouldn't be without this catalyst for change.
Right.
And so we started thinking about, okay, well, who are your potential allies among students? Who are your potential allies among teachers? And kind of sketched out a power map, identifying who the likely obstacles were. And along the way, as is often the case, when you start to look more closely at any kind of context where a campaign is being launched, we discovered that there were more probable allies than we had initially thought, not having begun the campaign. And, you know, and so that was certainly a powerful and empowering way for her to begin the work.
I bet. And I loved watching what that power map did for her. She was so excited by it to see it down in writing. And I think it made the journey really real and potentially obtainable because now she had a map.
Emily, I'm sorry you're breaking up. I can't really understand you.
Oh, can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. What I loved was that power map and what the effect that had on her and how all of a sudden she had a tangible map to proceed with her goal.
Right. You know, and that's, you know, we do a lot of training in Jewish communities around the country, working with individual leaders and groups of leaders, supporting them and giving them the tools they need to create change in their communities. And that's often the experience people have when you actually sit down and sketch, okay, this is what it will take to go from here to what feels like an impossible goal. But
Right.
when you create a plan, So then cool. you have a route to get there.
So cool. And I think one of the things I found so beautiful was, first of all, her commitment to Judaism is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And her faith. And she strikes me, it's impossible to discuss this film without, obviously the spirituality is part and parcel, but to me she feels like an incredibly old soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in one of the first community screenings we did was at a large Reform synagogue in Massachusetts, and kids were asking her, it was for kids and parents, it was a teen parent screening, and one kid asked her, you know, what do you want to do after you graduate?
Yeah.
And she said, well, I want to go to rabbinical school. And the kid behind me said, isn't she already a rabbi?
That's so great.
Yeah, and I said, I bet that's not the first time people are going to have that response.
Right.
She's in rabbinical school.
And maybe many times she has been in other lives. What's so cool about the film, at the end of it, you get to see where she is now, or probably now. Mm-hmm. Probably now she's a rabbi, is she?
Not quite, almost.
Yeah. So let's get into sort of the nuts and bolts of the film. It's really interesting for me. One of the things I struggle in my own life with is keeping things gray and not necessarily black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was incredible to me to how the filming was done. So you see a very strong reaction from the rabbi that he is not interested in really even looking at the possibility of a GSA in his school. And also some of the more orthodox students. And I had a really strong reaction initially when I saw them speaking against it. I was really angry. And then it was just so beautiful to see through the evolution of the film how they grapple with everything that she's brought to the forefront. And it really forces them to look at their faith and their belief system and how they come around. It's just fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there was tons of anger and frustration, but she does never seem to exhibit that. She just seems to forge ahead.
She definitely experienced anguish, I would say. I mean, I think we talk about in the film the pain in her voice when she talked about that first meeting with the rabbi.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, and I remember hearing her say, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be the Jew I want to be, you know, and be a lesbian. So interestingly, I mean, when people often talk about kind of where does your energy as an activist come from? And people talk about the role of anger and the role of pain. And I feel like for Shula, it was really this existential deep sense of pain coupled with a deep and really fierce sense of belonging and grounding and entitlement to this is my tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, with the support of adult mentors, and I think that's also a key part of the story, is the role of adult mentors for young people who are coming out and certainly who are trying to create change in their communities. So with that sense of this is my tradition and no one is going to make me give it up,
right.
And with the support that she got, you know, she was able to come out of that. But she definitely experienced a lot of pain.
Yeah, so she was human.
And you see glimpses of that in the film. I mean,
yes,
she has a lot of grace and kind of a natural, you know, people have spoken about her kind of beatific smile.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, she has this, you know, she just has this real grace and, you know, an almost expression of wonderment at humanity that
absolutely.
You constantly see.
Yeah.
But there are those glimpses of pain as well.
And the other thing I thought was so beautiful is how the sort of awkwardness of being a teenager and being in these developmental stages was, you really captured her essence. And yet, regardless of that, those human qualities she has, the spirit just drove her, which really amazed me. And the teachers. The teachers.
Yeah,
you know, well, first of all, she had the mentor that she talked about that she studied with regularly, who she said she felt like she didn't really know where she stood, but she pushed her constantly.
Yeah.
And she supported her, yet continued to push her and make her question. Fairly incredible to have the support system that she did have.
Yes, you know, and I would say it was a support system which she very much generated and which grew around her. I mean, you know, she had Anna Haberman, who is the teacher with whom she studied traditional Jewish texts. And I feel like that was a very deep spiritual kind of soul connection.
Mm-hmm.
On this issue, meaning, you know, Shula being out and Shula embracing her identity as a queer Jew, you know, was a source of kind of ongoing conflict and tension and struggle that they explored in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it wasn't until Shula started putting herself out there that some of the teachers at the school who who were gay, and they have been, and some of them were out, you know, to one another, but no one was out in a really public way in the school, that they started coming out. And there's, you know, there's this powerful scene in the film in which Shula sees her English teacher's keychain on her, on the teacher's desk.
Yes.
And she spies amidst the jumble of keys a rainbow keychain. Mm-hmm. You know, and her heart just kind of stops.
Right.
She's like, oh my God, it's a rainbow keychain.
Right.
And so after class, she goes up to the teacher and she says, I like your keychain. Yeah, which is very sweet. And mm-hmm. and we interview the teacher, and you hear the teacher in the film say, and oh my God, my heart was racing, and I thought, this is it. This
right.
is the moment.
Right.
Am I going to let her see me? And I want her to see me, mm-hmm. but, you know, will I see her, and will I let her see me back?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and she does decide to see and to be seen, and comes out to Shulamit, and you know, and for that teacher, that was a very critical moment in her life.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, has her own journey, some of which you see in the film, and she became a critical source of support for Shulamit. But my point is that was very much support that Shulamit helped, you know, helped bring into being.
But that's what blows me away. I mean, a 16-year-old who has this extraordinary effect on changing the lives of all of these adults in the school. I mean, that's really something to take in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Torah teacher, I'm forgetting the Torah teacher's name.
Susie Tamshel.
Yeah, really beautiful listening to her. And now her relationship with the young Orthodox young man who's
yeah.
really grappled and struggled with whether or not he could continue to learn Torah from someone who was gay. And ultimately decided that he didn't necessarily have to approve of it, but she was still completely valuable as a teacher and a human being just because she had different views.
Right, which, isn't the way of relating to LGBT people that, you know, is my ultimate hope
right,
for everyone in the world. But for him, he went from relating to being gay as something that prevented him from being in positive relationship with someone to, in his view, being, you know, recognizing, well, you know, in Jewish tradition, there are 613 commandments. I don't know anyone who observes all those commandments. And in fact, I know a lot of people I'm friends with who, as he puts it rather humorously, he's like, you know, who are Reformed Jews.
Right, exactly.
Who break lots of commandments.
Yeah.
So why should I view this any differently? And that's actually, you know, a critical encapsulation of one of the kind of benchmarks of change working in more traditional communities. I would imagine this is probably the case in traditional Christian and Muslim and, you know, other faith communities as well, which is, you know, people who historically have, you know, quote-unquote opposed homosexuality coming to a point of recognizing, you know, okay, this isn't something that I need to celebrate, just as I don't celebrate someone not keeping kosher, mm-hmm. someone not eating halal mm-hmm. meat, mm-hmm. someone not going to mass every week, but I have relationships with those people and they're in my lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and for me, those transgressions don't make those people not worthy of being in relationship and being in community.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective with the long view, you know, is the first step
exactly.
of what will hopefully be many steps leading towards a full embrace, but is a necessary first step.
Right. You know, and I thought it was interesting that the English professor was talking about, I guess one of the students asked her, you know, what is gay pride all about? You know,
mm-hmm.
why don't we have straight
mm-hmm.
pride?
Right.
And I loved her answer. You know, if every time we see a mattress commercial, that's straight pride. Every day with a man and a woman on the bed. Every time we see a marriage commercial with a man and a woman, that's straight pride. And until that exists equally on both sides, one needs to promote gay pride. So how did the idea to create a film around this come about?
Well, so this is, I think, a really beautiful story. So the idea for the film came from a gay man in his 50s who was then and still is now closeted in much of his life. He was one of our earliest financial supporters. And he came to, it was actually Keshet's first house party, first kind of parlor meeting fundraising party that happened in the winter of 2002. And I had asked Shulamit to come speak to talk about the campaign at the school and the role that Keshet was playing and supporting her. And he was just blown away by her story. And he came up to me afterward. He said, we've got to chronicle this story. Mm-hmm. This could really inspire people all over the country. You know, and at that point, I was Keshet's first full-time staff member. I was running the organization out of a room in my triple-decker in Jamaica Plain and had a $40,000 budget and, you know, was completely overwhelmed and felt like, my God, this is not the time to take on the making of a documentary film. And this guy said, no, I'm not talking about a documentary film. Just produce a video. Just produce a 5-minute video telling her story. Just profile her for 5 minutes. I thought, okay, you know, that's manageable. Right. So I called up Irina Feingold, who ended up being the director mm-hmm. of the film, who's a filmmaker and someone with whom I've been friends for a long time. And mm-hmm. I said, hey, do you want to work on this project? We've got $5,000. We just need to produce a 5-minute video profile. It's a really exciting story. And she said, sure. So needless to say, given that it's a 1-hour long film, it became a documentary film, and it went from being a few month long project to a 3.5-year project. Right. And, you know, and cost far more than $5,000, mm-hmm. though probably less than most people would think. And, you know, and he was right there supporting us every step of the way. There's a Jewish concept called tikkun, which means, the word tikkun literally means a fixing, as in to fix something that is broken, you know, or to heal something that is broken. And, you know, and I've said before that I think it's really extraordinary that it's, you know, it's a film about making a communal tikkun, which served as a kind of personal tikkun, you know, for this man who couldn't be out mm-hmm. in his personal life, but felt like he wanted to amplify the voices of those who could be and who could inspire others mm-hmm. to be.
Can you tell us the meaning of Hineni?
Sure. So Hineni means here I am, mm-hmm. and it's a term that appears many times in the Torah, and it appears at moments when someone is being called upon to step up as their full, most powerful selves and take on leadership of some kind. So it's the word that Moses hears from the burning bush. It's the word that God says to Adam and Eve when Adam and Eve are hiding in the Garden of Eden. So it's a word that is said at moments of intense possibility mm-hmm. that in which the possibility of stepping up and really making a difference is offered. Mm-hmm. And it is when the human in the Torah says, Hineni, here I am, that the affirmation is voiced of, yes, I'm going to try to do this.
Oh, I love it. How did that title come about?
So, fittingly, for a story about community transformation, it came about in a collective process.
Great.
We had a naming party
awesome.
At the Keshet office and invited a whole host of volunteers and leaders and just brainstormed together yeah. for 3 hours.
So cool.
That's how we got to it.
Okay, so what year did you decide, okay, we're going to go ahead and make this film? Was that...
So that was in 2002.
What was that process? I mean, that's a long... 3 years, you said?
Yeah, so we started filming in spring 2002, and the film premiered at the MFA, Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, in the Boston Jewish Film Festival in November of 2005. So it's about 3.5 years.
How prevalent is this film? Where is it being shown? I mean, I only came to it recently.
So we were actually quite stunned at the level of immediate interest that the film yeah. generated.
The amount of yeah. awards it's won is fabulous.
And just the fact that pretty much immediately after the Boston premiere, which was in November 2005, we were just initially and for quite a long time afterward, were bombarded with requests for film screenings mm-hmm. from Jewish film festivals, from LGBT film festivals, mm-hmm. from some women's and independent film festivals, and then increasingly from Jewish communities, from synagogues, from Jewish day schools, mm-hmm. from Jewish youth movements. We recently screened the film just a few weeks ago in a Jewish retirement community. Mm-hmm. It's screened in several hundred Jewish communities around the country and has screened in festivals and in some other communal settings in about 14 countries around the world.
That's so cool. And there is, so is there subtitles?
Yes, the film is subtitled in Hebrew, Spanish, and Romanian.
So cool. Oh my gosh.
So the Romanian LGBT film festival folks took it upon themselves to translate the film into Romanian.
So cool.
Yeah.
And there's a curriculum that goes along with it, is that correct?
Yes. So we produced a comprehensive curriculum guide, which is designed for use with youth in grades 7 through 12 and in both formal and informal educational settings. So, you know, in both day schools and Hebrew schools, as well as Jewish youth groups and summer camps, which is what I mean when I say it, informal educational settings.
Yeah.
And it also has a lot of exercises that can be used in programs with adults. The exercises and lesson plans range from looking at traditional Jewish texts, such as there's a lesson plan looking at the evolution of the status of the deaf person in Jewish law.
Wow.
Because once the deaf-mute person was viewed as not having any rights whatsoever, and we trace how, you know, from the first time that there's anything written about the status of a deaf person through the medieval period, through the early modern period, through a modern interpretation, you see how legal change happened in response to changing social mores and increased scientific knowledge about the fact that deaf people did have all of that deaf people were as fully human and fully deserving of full rights as anyone else. And so, you know, so that's a lesson plan in which, you know, obviously some of the questions push people to think about, okay, so, you know, what implications does looking at the evolution of Jewish law in this case of how a certain category of people were related to, what implications does that have today for how we relate to LGBT people within Jewish tradition?
Right.
So that, which, you know, would be used, obviously, in more of a day school setting or maybe a Hebrew high school setting. And then we have a lesson plan about the role of allies, and it looks at Abraham Joshua Heschel's involvement in the civil rights movement and his relationship with Martin Luther King Jr. and, you know, and extrapolates from that to, you know, talking about the role of straight allies in the fight for LGBT rights. And that's a lesson plan that is used, you know, more in social studies class, let's say.
So if someone wanted to purchase this film and perhaps a curriculum, how would they go about doing that?
So the easiest way is to go to our website, which is www.keshetonline.org, and that's all one word, and Keshet is spelled K-E-S-H-E-T.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about what Shulamit's family's reaction was when you suggested creating the film.
You know, they really looked to her. You know, it was something that she wanted to do, and they were right there with her every step of the way. They had concern for Shulamit, you know, from the outset about what it would mean for Shulamit to be out in the way that she was. And this was well before we started making the film. This is when Shulamit was decided that she was going to enter her high school and be out and then be an activist. So they had concerns around her on that front, but they were really supportive. And during the course of the making of the film, we had some difficulties at some point with access to the school and access to interviews with different people at the school. And her parents, together with some other parents at the school, joined together in kind of a film, I think they called it the Film Project Allies Committee.
Uh-huh.
And so parents started organizing and talking to board members and letting it be known that the board didn't need to be afraid of backlash from parents about if this film were made.
I see.
So they were quite extraordinary, and I know a lot of people who have had less than wholly positive responses from their parents upon coming out have been very moved watching the exchanges with them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a beautiful scene when her mother is crying and talking about, you know, this is God created her and God gave her this part of her, and we love her.
Right.
And her struggle because of, I think, her fear of the struggles her daughter would face.
Right. I mean, she says there was that boy in South Dakota. I mean, she means Matthew Shepard in Wyoming. She
says
that boy in South Dakota. They killed him because he was gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was,
it just
It
just makes me tear up thinking about it because her love for her daughter is just so extraordinary and so
right
there. It's just beautiful.
Right.
And then the assembly. Can you talk a bit about that, the first assembly, how that came about?
Sure. So the way Shulamit went about working to establish a Gay Straight Alliance, she used really, you know, traditional community organizing methods of meeting with people one-on-one and telling her story and urging people to tell their story. So she would talk about what it was like for her as the only out lesbian in the school and how she related to her Jewish identity and just how it felt, period, to be a 16-year-old lesbian in the world, and encourage people to share their perspectives. And, you know, and one of the people she met with was the head of the school, who is a rabbi who was ordained at an Orthodox rabbinical seminary, and he initially is really not supportive, and I talked about that a bit earlier. And gradually, several students kind of cluster around her, and they establish kind of a working group around, you know, towards the establishment of a GSA. And it's all girls, which I think isn't that atypical,
right,
in for GSAs or pre-GSAs, mm-hmm, in high schools. They initially are girls, all of whom identify as straight allies.
I thought that was so beautiful, their support.
Right. Over the course of the film, you see that two of them are, right, actually in a relationship and are really gorgeously in love. And,
right,
actually, they're still together.
Wow.
You know, nearly 10 years later.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yes.
Wow.
And so they, after a while of enough conversations, they feel like what we need to do is some kind of public action. And what would be really amazing is if we have a student and a teacher come out. Now, by that point, four of the, I think there were maybe 28 teachers at the school, 30 teachers, mm-hmm, at the school. So four of the 30 or so teachers at the school were known to Shulamit as gay, lesbian, or bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
None of them had ever made any kind of public statement in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see in the film there's this kind of interesting interesting exchange among the teachers where they're trying to figure out who will be the teacher who will come out. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, each of them have their reasons for wanting to come out in front of the school and not wanting to come out in front of the school. And you get a sense of, you know, the vulnerability and fear, you know, and emerging pride that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they settle upon this woman, Jessica Keimowitz, who was one of the most popular teachers in the school, and she was a sports coach,
mm-hmm,
and she was the best history teacher, and everyone wanted to get her for history.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said that she and Shulamit would tell their stories in front of the school. And so they every month had a public gathering of the entire student body that focused on a different issue a different contemporary issue in general or a different issue in Jewish life. And so,
mm-hmm,
that day's issue was, I think they said homosexuality,
mm,
you know, and Jewish identity. And so Shulamit told her story, and Jeff Kimowitz told, mm, her story, and, you know, and people say that people who were there that day say it was unlike any other day that you could have heard,
mm-hmm,
you could have heard a pin drop,
yeah,
in the room, because everything was, people were just so transfixed by them.
Mm.
And, you know, and then after Shulamit and Jessica Kimowitz told their stories, there was a panel of rabbis sharing different perspectives. But really, when people think of the assembly and talk about it, they talk about what it was like to hear Shulamit telling her story, what it was like to hear Jessica Kimowitz, who was a teacher who was so admired, and,
mm-hmm,
hear her talk about feeling afraid,
right,
and feeling like she needed to hide, and the energy that it took to hide.
And then,
and she didn't want to hide anymore.
Yeah, and I thought that was how the kids were so stunned that this woman they admired so much and they thought was so strong was afraid. That was,
right,
so striking to them.
Right.
And then that in turn inspired several others, I think.
Right. And so, and then someone stood up, a kid stood up in the assembly,
mm,
and said, so why can't this school have a GSA?
Mm.
And that was really the kind of final push, which led to a few meetings of some different committees of adults that finally let it be. And interestingly, what the decision-making body at the school decided was, initially they decided that it could be a support group,
mm-hmm,
but not an advocacy group,
mm-hmm,
and they made that distinction. And,
mm-hmm,
the students wanted it to be a GSA that both provided support and did outreach and education in the school. And they said that it couldn't be called a gay straight alliance. And so initially, the student called the group the Open House,
mm-hmm,
after the LGBT Community Center in Jerusalem, which is called Open House.
Mm-hmm.
Within even a year or two, it was being called the GSA. And, you know, today it's very much the GSA. And basically students just ignored the directive from above. And so,
right,
students would get on a loudspeaker and say, GSA meeting, room 610. And, you know, Rabbi Lehman, the head of school, would look at Gina Fried, the English teacher in the film, who ended up being the advisor to the club, and he'd say, Gina, and she's like, well, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know?
Right. They're teenagers.
Right. She's like, I told them to call it the Open House.
And, you know, it's really striking to me that's still how hard it is for boys. That's,
yeah,
really sad.
Yeah, it's very sad.
And
very sad.
You know, one of the beautiful, there's so many beautiful parts. This film is, I can't recommend it highly enough, but I really love the short films after the documentary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to ask you if you had watched any of the extras.
All of them. They're just wonderful. Well, I always love that I love when they bring it current day and you get to see where all the teachers are, where Shulamit is, and where several of the students are, too, that had been struggling. One kid in particular, a young man who was not out and talked
in
about...
In high school, yeah, and in the film, is not out, yeah.
And talked about how hard that was and how the negative connotations that would have had for him that he just wasn't ready to face.
Right. I mean, he also talks about me. He says, I'm so much happier now.
Right.
I feel like I'm so much more myself with my friends now.
Right.
But he also talks about how he feels like he feels a lot of pressure around conforming to, you know, traditional masculine gender norms.
Yeah.
And he's very aware of how he crosses his legs,
right,
and how he walks down the street. And, you know, and those, you know, those are gender norms that, you know, oppress everyone, you know, gay or straight.
Right.
But, you know, there's obviously a different dynamic for gay men who are sensitive around those issues.
But really, really beautiful, and I think incredibly important to see that on film from such an honest voice. And then fascinating to me also that Shulamit, she went to Smith and Brown, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
And her identification is queer. And I loved what she talked about, the spectrum, that she really couldn't be defined specifically on the spectrum. And that queer was really a political term, because she really is an activist. Maybe you can explain that a little more better than I did.
Yeah, so this is, you know, you said earlier that, you know, you have sometimes struggled with
the black and white,
with seeing things in grays,
yeah,
and living in the gray. And I feel like this is a film that is absolutely about the shades in between,
totally,
black and white,
totally,
in every way,
mm-hmm,
you know, in terms of how to relate to Judaism and to,
right,
religion and to an identity community of any kind that matters to you, and certainly in how to relate to sexuality and gender. So
yeah.
Shulamit shares in one of the interview with her that is included on the DVD of where she is today, that today she identifies as queer, that she doesn't identify as a lesbian anymore. And, you know, and that's something that is hard for some people to hear,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, she is this teen lesbian hero.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so it's hard for people to hear, you know, that she's given up that identity, you
mm-hmm
know, you know, and people, LGBT people and some straight allies feel like, oh no, this is going to lead people, some people to say, well, look, it is a phase. People do grow out,
right,
of it.
Right.
And so that's led to some challenging conversations
mm-hmm
that we've had, you know, over the years, when people ask about that, or, you know, or when people, you know, it's just, everyone is so interconnected
mm-hmm
nowadays, and then people kind of hear that, oh, did she date a man at some
right
point? And so, you know, so that's definitely led to some challenging conversations. And I've had the experience more than once of speaking with a representative of a Jewish community, you know, a rabbi or a director of education at a synagogue or something, and the person will say, so I heard that Shulamit doesn't identify as a lesbian anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, well, right, yeah, she identifies as queer now. And then the next question is, so what does that mean for your film? You know, there's this immediate response
right
that, well, this must somehow undermine
exactly
the validity of the story.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, it's not the story that we would have written
right
had we,
right,
you know, had we chosen to kind
right
of continue everybody's narrative
right
for what would be most politically useful for us.
Right.
On the other hand, there's a way in which this is very educationally and politically useful, because
exactly
it brings out people's stereotypes
exactly
and assumptions and biases around identity,
yep,
you know, and brings out many people's way of relating to a film about a gay teen as kind of only relevant to the lives of other gay teens or gay adults, rather than, you know, this is a film about identity, this is a film
mm-hmm
about understanding oneself,
mm-hmm,
this is a film about becoming an activist, this is a film about creating change in the Jewish community, this is a film about conflicts between tradition and personal identity, you know, and this is a film, you know, for everyone, you know, of any sexual orientation or any gender
absolutely
identity.
Just struggling to find one's identity, period. And I wonder what... I think she did speak to this. Did she speak to that in the film? The fact that she no longer identifies as lesbian?
She in the interview that is included on the DVD in the extra.
Right, okay.
She says I identify as queer now.
Right, and but does she speak to
whether how people...
Yeah, respond?
Yeah, she does. she says that, you know, she says something similar to what I just said. That,
yeah,
she feels like it's a film about change, it's a film about identity,
yeah,
and, you know, and this is who she is, and
right,
that who she was, and who she was then is a part of who she is now. And so
I also just think, yeah, it is a continuing journey, and it really gives people permission to fall anywhere on that spectrum, and just the freedom to exist and to,
right,
and to sort of move back and forth and change and grow. And do you remember when she came to Keshet, did she talk about when she first identified as gay or started to feel that she was gay? Because it's amazing to me today, you know, how teens are aware,
mm-hmm,
of this.
Right. I mean, she said that it was in seventh grade that she did.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, we're seeing, you know, and everyone who works kind of in the, who works professionally in the LGBT community talks about, you know, increasingly seeing kids come out as gay, seeing kids come out as trans, you know,
yeah,
in middle school. I mean, we've helped support a couple of GSAs at Jewish community centers for middle school students, you know, not just for Jewish middle school,
right,
students, but for middle school students kind of in a community where there were only GSAs for high school kids and there was nothing for middle school kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I see that as about just, you know, what kids now see in the world.
Right.
I mean, I think many of us, I came out in college, and I mean, many of us who came out kind of post first being sexually aware look back now and think, oh, yeah, I was in love with her.
Exactly. I was just talking to someone about this. Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, if we had known,
right,
you know, and some people do know very, very early on, but for those of us, you know, who didn't, I think if we had, you know, if we had had out teachers, if we had,
yeah,
you know, if Ellen had been on TV then, and,
right,
you know, if popular culture had been different,
yeah,
then we would have seen what was possible. You know, and that said, some people's identities just evolve in different ways. But I think for many kids today, it's possible to come out when kids first start having romantic sexual feelings for other,
yeah,
you know, for other kids, because they see that, oh, it's possible. And even I see people who are happy and healthy out there,
right,
having romantic sexual feelings for people of the same sex.
Yeah, really amazing. I thought that was actually really beautiful that there's one of her friends who's a straight young woman, incredibly eloquent, and don't remember her name.
But Laura.
Laura. Oh, my gosh. What a person. And she talked about, you know, how incredible it was that, you know, they're in this process of discovering their sexual selves and the importance of being able to explore these feelings and these thoughts. And I just, again, beyond wise, beyond their years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always called her, Irina, the filmmaker, and I always called her 16 going on 26.
No, really, incredible.
Not just because she had such poise and
unbelievable,
and
yeah,
intelligent.
You could see her as an adult. I mean, it was all right,
mm-hmm,
there.
Right.
And I didn't even realize until the end of the film that the music was by Katie Curtis, who I love.
Mm.
That,
mm-hmm,
was really neat. And her interview, and I love seeing you and Irina talking about the process. It's really an extraordinary piece. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and we're very grateful to you, Katie, for it. Actually, it wasn't an easy process, just in terms of dealing with kind of legalities and record companies for us to be able to use her music, and she definitely made it really clear to her people that it was important for her to be a part of this story.
That is so cool.
We're very grateful to her for that, and, you know, and I'm so glad she agreed to do an interview and to share, you know, to share her own journey.
Absolutely.
Coming out, which
is,
you know,
beautiful.
Very much a similar, you know, in some ways a similar journey, you know, to Shulamit,
yeah,
of moving from feeling really alone in the world,
right,
to,
right,
a place of real strength.
God, she touched so many people. How did this whole film affect you and your personal feelings around being gay and being Jewish? Did it change things for you or further?
I mean, I would say that it definitely affected how I feel. I often say that, you know, I'm a professional queer Jew.
Right.
And so it affected kind of how I see my role in the world as a professional queer Jew. And, you know, and one piece that is definitely a learning I gained from this film is how transformation happens often as series of small steps.
Mm.
Sometimes transformation happens in a dramatic epiphanous moment,
mm-hmm,
but more often when we're working for change in the world, it happens in small, almost imperceptible steps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really useful for me to remember at times when, you know, I feel discouraged, or, you know, other Keshet staff members feel discouraged, you know, and it's been useful for me, you know, to share that when talking with Jewish community leaders, Jewish educators, you know, or anyone who kind of is in a position of power to create change in their community, but is feeling resistant mm-hmm. to doing anything dramatic. And, mm-hmm. you know, and for me, that, you know, that moment in the film, which I referred to earlier, when Shulamit sees her teacher's keychains, mm-hmm. and just, you know, and you see on her face in the film the immediate
yeah.
sense of, you know, my God, yeah. I found someone. I found an ally. I found someone who will stand with me. You know, and so I often will say to people when I'm giving a talk or doing a training, I'll say, you know, yes, this work is hard, and the work of creating full equality and inclusion in the world is difficult, and there's a lot of things that need to be done, and there are some really small things you can do that actually are pretty easy. Like we created LGBT safe zone stickers with Jewish stars on them, you know, for use in synagogues and Hebrew schools and in other Jewish settings. So I was like, you know, put a Jewish LGBT safe zone sticker on your desk, you know, on your door.
Oh, how cool.
People will notice that.
Right.
You know, and I think for people who haven't, you know, for anyone who hasn't felt particularly marginalized due to their identity, it's hard to understand that how people actually do see all of those signs. I mean, it's somewhat easier, actually, I would say, doing this work, it's somewhat easier in terms of making that connection of what it's like to feel marginalized and then to see some
Absolutely.
Kind of signpost of inclusion,
yeah.
you know, because I can say, you know, think of a time when you were somewhere where, you know, you felt like you were the only Jewish person or one of few Jewish people, you know, and then you saw a Magen David, a Star of David around someone's neck, or it was Hanukkah and you saw a menorah in someone's window. And
it's true.
You know, and think about how that made you feel.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, I've experienced all of that, as I'm sure most Jews have. Okay, so can you just give a brief overview of Keshet, which is really a wonderful organization.
So Keshet is a national organization whose mission is to create full equality and inclusion for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Jews in Jewish life. We started out as a local Boston organization, and the film was actually our first kind of entry into the national arena, and we officially became a national organization in 2007. Mm. Today we have offices in Boston, Denver, and as of 2 months ago, San Francisco.
Wow, how awesome.
And the work that we do around the country, it focuses on training, both training Jewish educators, Hebrew school teachers, day school teachers, youth group leaders, etc., and on training people to be trainers in their community, which is a big focus of our work. So we focus on training and consulting in different communities around the country, and developing resources for the work of inclusion. You know, we saw the powerful impact that Hineni has had and continues to have.
Yep.
And so since then, we've created other resources that, you know, as we put it, can do the work of inclusion in communities. So, for instance, a couple of months ago, in honor of Harvey Milk, the first Harvey Milk Day, we launched our first three, what we hope will be our first three series of LGBT Jewish Heroes posters.
I saw and those online. They're beautiful.
Thanks. So these are posters of Harvey Milk, of the writer Leslie Ann Newman, and of the gender activist, theorist, and writer Kate Bornstein. And these were specifically developed for use with kind of young adults and younger and younger settings. So for college Hillels and, you know, and for college LGBT centers, you know, and younger. And, you know, and the hope really is that, you know, someday soon a kid will, you know, a sixth grade boy will walk into his Hebrew school classroom and, you know, next to the map of Israel on the wall and the poster of some Jewish baseball player, there'll be a poster of Harvey Milk celebrated as a Jewish hero.
So yeah, how wonderful would that be? And so people who want any information about Keshet or the movie can go to keshetonline.org.
Exactly.
Correct. And you also have a Facebook page.
We also have a Facebook page. We tweet.
And you have lots of events.
We do. And so that's the other piece. And so we started out as a local Boston organization, and in Boston, very much over the years developed as an organization that both built community among queer Jews by sponsoring different kinds of social events from LGBT Jewish speed dating to kayaking on the Charles, to Shabbat dinner potlucks on Friday night, Sabbath, you know, and so we've continued to do that in Boston, even as we're now working around the country, and we've similarly developed that kind of community building approach in Denver as well.
That's so great.
It's not something that we're kind of exporting, you know, to every community. Mm-hmm. We very much look to leaders in communities around the country mm-hmm. to determine what makes the most sense for their community.
Right. Well, I can't say enough about this film, and I so appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thanks so much for your interest and for all your kind words.
Oh, my gosh. I can't say enough. And so I really think everybody should see this film. There's no need to be Jewish or gay. it's incredibly poignant and moving and beautiful, absorbing, and has won absolute. These are all film awards, right? Boston Jewish Film Festival, San Francisco, New York.
So those are all film festivals that the film
showed in?
That the film was accepted into, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a plethora of them. So, Idit, thank you again. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I hope I get to meet you in person one day. I need to come to a Keshet event, I think.
Yes, you should. You definitely should.
I will make a point of it.
Great.
All right, thanks again.
All right.
Take good care.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.